Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hey friends, I hope you're doing okay and staying safe and healthy. I know these conversations are important to helping many of you feel less alone, so this week I wanted to bring you an interview with Summer. Summer is a choice mom of two girls, and we share our passion for connecting with women who are on this path, sharing their stories, and also talking about the importance of processing all of those complex feelings that come up on this journey. I hope you enjoy this conversation and also the helpful videos that Summer has put out on YouTube. Check out the show notes for more about that. Hi, Summer. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast. You and I connected on Instagram, and I have been following your account and your two beautiful baby girls as a single mother by choice. I was really drawn to some of what you have been writing about the difference between how you felt about being a single mother by choice before and then how it feels now that you're in it. A lot of the women that have been on the show and a lot of the women I interact with are thinkers and triers, and they're not to the point where you are yet. And so I just thought you would be such a wealth of knowledge and experience for those of us that are still trying to conceive or still even just considering. So I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. Yes, I'm so passionate about this topic because when I was a thinker and when I was a trier, it was grueling for me and it was such a hard decision. I did not come to this choice easily. It was something I drug my feet so much on. I avoided this at all costs. And then now that this is my life and I am a choice mom and I have my two little girls, it's fantastic. And so my eyes have just been so opened, and I just want to go back and talk to my younger self. Like, oh my gosh, don't stress so much. You know, like I put so much pressure on myself in that phase. I'm really passionate about talking to women who are in that phase, and I don't push this lifestyle. Like, I'm really not like, a woman needs a man, like a fish needs a bicycle, just do it, you know, because it's not for everybody, and that's okay. But for people who are thinking and are considering, I really have a heart to share with those women what it's really like on this side and how you can stress so much at the beginning and still be so happy with the choice that you do make if that's what works for you. Because it's not going to work for everybody, but I think for a lot of women who are considering this option, it's a way better option than they know.
Yes. So we just jumped right in and we will circle back to your actual story and experience. But I do want to tell you, I've never told you this before, of all the words that women have said or just that I've read or consumed in this whole journey, something that you said has been a line that I have repeated over and over to myself and to other people. And I don't even know if you remember this. On a post that I made, you commented that you didn't regret your choices, but you did regret your options.
Yes,
and I have thought about that so much, about how it sucks that I didn't have better relationships that felt like they were a good fit to have a family with, that my options, they weren't stellar. They weren't great, you know?
Right.
But this choice,
yes.
given the options in front of me, this choice makes so much sense. And it is my best choice. Of the options I have, it is my best choice. And so you helped me reframe that in just one little Instagram comment. And it's been profound for me. And so I think we had already talked at that point about you being on the podcast, but that was when I was like, okay, I've got to talk to her. Like, this is one part podcast and one part like counseling session for me.
Yes, totally. Because when I was a thinker, I carried some shame about this as an option. I avoided becoming a single mom by choice because I kind of in my mind had a thought that those women were in some way failing, that they were in some way not succeeding or they weren't doing well or something. I was like, I don't want to be a failure, which sounds so stupid to me now, but in that space where I was first even introduced to this idea of becoming a choice mom, that's really how I felt, like, oh my gosh, like something has gone wrong. As I grew and life went on, you know, as I thought more about it, I came to peace about it, because when I look back, should I have done something different in the options that I had? No, I did not have regrets about the choices that I had made with the relationships I had been in and with the options that I had had. I had a really wonderful relationship with a man who didn't want kids. Do I regret that time that I spent with him? No, I don't. Do I, you know, wish maybe things had been different? Of course. But I don't have anything looking back like, oh, that's the one that got away. I should have something else. I'm pretty clear on each of the people that I dated and each of the choices that I made the right decision in those relationships. I don't regret any of those choices along the way. But oh yes, I do have some regret that I didn't have a better option.
Right.
That I didn't come across somebody that I felt we could make a solid family together. Because my ideal would be to be married and raise the kids together. That would definitely be option A for me, but that did not present itself. So yada, yada, here I am.
So here you are. And let's backtrack a little bit so we can find out a little bit more about where you are. So will you just tell us kind of sure. In a nutshell who you are and tell us about your kids and your journey?
So I'm 41. I am a single choice mother to two little girls. I have a 2.5-year-old and I have a 10-month-old. They're both little girls. They are fantastic. I'm very busy. I have my hands very full, but I always knew that I wanted two. So I kind of went back to back, just let's get it done. I did IVF to conceive both of them, because I actually started this whole process with an egg freeze, which your story kind of reminds me of myself, where I started out freezing my eggs for fertility preservation. I was like, I need to buy some time. It was not, yeah, I'm just gonna have a baby on my own. Let's just do this and jump into it. That was not me. I was like dragging my feet at every step. I'm going to freeze my eggs and then consider my options. I'm going to freeze my eggs and hope and pray, you know?
Right.
And so because I had those frozen eggs, and the process that you go through to freeze your eggs is essentially, as you know, the first half of IVF, I knew that I had some underlying fertility challenges because of my test results, because of my responses, et cetera. I ended up having to freeze my eggs 3 times to get enough eggs to feel comfortable with, because I didn't freeze embryos. I didn't do any of that. I just froze eggs. And you know, choosing how many eggs is sufficient is a tricky situation. After 3 rounds, I felt good about it. But I knew that I was going to do IVF someday when I wanted to get pregnant, because I didn't think that IUI was going to be a very successful route for myself. So once I had made the decision to move ahead and try to get pregnant, I chose a donor. I didn't fertilize all my eggs. I fertilized some, because I still in the back of my mind had that, like, you know, what if I meet this wonderful man and he just really wants to have my babies? I fertilized probably like 2/3 of my eggs and came up with a cohort of embryos. And then I transferred the first embryo, got pregnant, and I actually miscarried that pregnancy, which is very rare to have a genetically tested embryo that sticks and proceeds to where the fetus has a heartbeat and all of that, and then it still did not work out.
That is rare.
Yeah, it sucked. I'm going to do a YouTube video on that, and that's a whole topic. There's so many subtopics under this whole choice mom thing, because just fertility stuff is so intricate and complicated, and I just don't think people really have in their mind how delicate of a process it can be to get pregnant, sustain a pregnancy, and have a healthy baby in your older age. Because most women who are, you know, making this choice to become single moms tend to be later 30s into 40s. It can be a very challenging time of life to get pregnant and have a healthy baby.
Okay, so you did the preservation, and I think we do have a lot in common there. You did the 3 rounds of egg freezing, and then how long between what started as just preservation and then deciding to fertilize with donor sperm?
So I did my first round of egg freeze when I was 35, and my third round was somewhere in the midst of being 36. And then I was 38 before I started trying to get pregnant, and I was 39, almost 40 when I delivered my first, and then 40, almost 41 when I had my second. I'm trying to think. I must have been like 37 when I kind of engaged in the single mom by choice community. There was a meetup in my area where I connected with a bunch of women who were considering becoming choice moms. And then they were all like started trying to get pregnant right away. And I really liked the group of women. Being around those women who were interested in becoming choice moms really helped me do some of the work that I needed to do still before I could pursue that option, because I had hangups. I was so wrong about it, but I had to really dismantle what I thought it said about me as a person before I could, with a clear heart, proceed. So I engaged with this community, started getting to know these women and hanging out and all this stuff. And I remember being like, I could just come to these meetings forever and never try to get pregnant. I really liked them. I was really learning a lot and really doing some good personal work. But I was not in any kind of hurry to pull the trigger at all. I remember I was at a weekend meetup with these women, and I would ask them, what made you decide to pull the trigger? Because I don't want to pull the trigger. I still want to do it. I just want something to come and save me. You know, I kind of asked them, what helped you, you know, make this decision or take this leap? And it was interesting because for every single person, it was something different. There wasn't even really a common theme of what helped them to pull the trigger. For me, I got clarity on, there were some different pieces. One, my parents are getting older. I'm super close to my parents. I was very clear that I was going to be a mom. That was never in doubt at all. I was going to be a mom. I was going to have 2 kids at least. And I just started thinking, God, the longer I wait, the less time my parents have with these kids. And I really want my future children to know my parents and enjoy my parents before they're too old. That was a piece of it. And then if I was going to become a choice mom, like, you kind of need your parents' help a little bit more if that's an option, if you're blessed to have that as an option. And I was just kind of like, God, I think I'm going to need their help. The younger that they are, the more help that they're going to be able to offer. And then somebody had made a comment that stuck in my head, which was, this guy said, "Some, you're a catch with no kids, and you'd be a catch with a kid too." It just kind of shifted in my mind. And I thought, you know, if or when I meet the right guy, he's not just going to love me, the single person. Like, he's going to love me and my kids. And if he doesn't, then it's not for me. That kind of combination of things made it easier, because I kind of had a community that I was integrated with that was stepping into this space and having babies on their own. And I knew that they were wonderful people who were going to raise wonderful, well-adapted children. I had family as a backup. I was ready in my own heart. And then I just said, screw it. Here we go. I'm doing it. It was the best.
Gosh, thank you so much for sharing all of that. I'm in that place still of being certain that this is the right choice for me, and also having a lot of grief still around it. And I've done a ton of work, but I think the latest hurdle that I've come over was I got myself to a place where I really felt like I had created some security in having eggs and embryos frozen, having my embryos tested, and knowing that I have 5 good quality embryos to work with. And so that, in a way, sort of, I could pause the clock for long enough to just kind of take a little breather. And so what I told myself at the beginning of the break was, I don't know how long this break is going to be, but I'm just going to wait until I am just totally at peace, because I want to go into this transfer all zen and blissed out on this major choice that I'm making. And now it's been 5 months and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Like, I'm probably going to go in still being pretty unsure, and not unsure that I want this in the long run, but just don't anticipate having the feeling of I'm totally at peace with this. I think that for me, the challenge has really become, how do I hold all of the nuanced feelings that I have about this and like move forward with self-compassion and love the parts of me that are doing this and are making this super empowered, beautiful choice that I know I'm never going to regret. Mm-hmm. And also hold space for the part of me that is really sad that this is my best option, you know?
Totally. Each part of what you said totally resonates with me. And one of the reasons I so want to engage with the thinker, trier crowd is because I remember how hard those pieces are, but I wish that somebody, what I didn't have at that time and what the thinkers don't really have tangibly, is the joy of being a mom. Now that I'm a mom, I can acknowledge those things are challenges, but it is so offset by this joy. Yesterday at 6:30 in the morning, my two-year-old insisted on playing in the pool in the front yard that has like 6 inches of water in it. And I'm like, it's too cold. And she's like, no, I really want to swim. I'm like wrapped in my coat, taking her swimming, and I'm watching her play, and it's so much joy. But in the thinking phase, you don't have that joy yet. And you kind of maybe in your brain know that it's gonna come someday, but it hasn't filled your heart yet. And it will.
This is so perfect, because I have been doing some coaching with women who are in the thinker trier stage. And everyone feels like they're in such this unique struggle. And as we're talking about this, it's like, no, we're all thinking the same things. So I would love to kind of throw some of the most common things that I hear from women out. And they're probably the same things you're worrying about. They're the things I'm worrying about. And then just have you tell us from the other side how much this really matters, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So a big one is, how am I going to afford it?
Okay. And that's no joke, because it is very important to plan financially. And there's so many different life plans that could work. When I told my dad, this is what I want to do, he was pretty surprised. He didn't know that that was really like coming down the pike. When he said, if I wanted to move in with him, he would help me. My parents are married, but it was a conversation I was having with my dad. He said I could move in with them and he would help me raise the baby. And I was just like, oh, that's so sweet. That I did not take him up on that offer, but friends have, and that's an option. You know, like if making it work financially means moving in with your parents until your child is 5 and you don't have to pay for daycare again or whatever, that's totally an option. You know, each person has to look at their situation and their team and their finances and figure out, how can I get through it? And really the hardest part is the first few years before they're in school, because school is free childcare. It's not a joke. It's a serious financial commitment, but it is the best thing ever. And if you don't get another car for the next 15 years, who cares? You know, there are a lot of ways that you can make your budget work.
Yes. I think it's just priorities. I mean, I can tell just from listening to you that there are sacrifices that Summer, the mom, would be willing to make that Summer, the single girl, probably would not have been up for.
Totally. There are so many different situations. I know 2 choice moms who have actually moved in together during like this COVID time because they don't want to be isolated. Childcare during COVID is so jacked up. Mm-hmm. And single moms who have to provide for their children and need childcare during this crazy time is just very challenging. But you have to put a team together. And you know what? I talk about this in one of my YouTube videos about, I did a video on 4 ways to prepare to become a choice mom. And this is funny because my number one thing was save your money, honey, because you're going to need it. But one of my other things was like, take the single out of becoming a single mom, get your team together. This is not something that you can just completely do on your own. You need friends. You need family if that's an option. You need a community. I so recommend connecting with other choice moms physically in your area. I'm all about online. You know, that's a great option. But in person is so recommendable because they will be in similar situations to you. You guys can help each other out and even just talk through these things together. How are you making it work? What's working for you? What's not working for you? And figure out what will work for your situation, whether that's financially, whether that's childcare, etc. I'm really invested in 2 different mommy groups. One is my single choice mom group, which was so great for me because I established these friendships with these women prior to becoming a mom. For the most part, they didn't have kids at the time that we were kind of getting to know each other either. And we have grown together. I mean, you mentioned the grief portion of being the thinker and getting to the trying phase and stuff. I mean, we literally got together and had like, we did grief rituals. Everybody write down something that you need to let go of. Tell us why you need to let go of it. And then we'd like burn it. That was the kind of stuff that just solidified our bonds. Like we were just in this together, you know? It's been so important to have those connections. But then after I had my kids, I joined another, just a regular mommy group in my area because my choice mom group is pretty geographically spread out around town. And then my just regular mommy group is in my city so that most of the women in that group are geographically very close by. Those women can stop by, like when I had my baby, like they'd stop by with meals and stuff like that because they're close. They're 5 to 15 minutes away and is an important thing also. But I really do like having a network of both. I don't feel not part of the regular mommy group because I'm a single mom or whatever. Once I became a mom, I felt full-fledged. I'm legit. I can go to any mommy group I want to go to, whatever. I really enjoy the regular one, but there's just something so unique and so special about being a part of a choice mom group.
Choice moms, by default, have a very strong personality, you know, like they tend to be women who are go-getters and empowered. That brings me actually to another thing that I hear from the women that I coach, which is I'm worried that my strong personality and being the only parent is going to screw my kid up.
Well, you are going to screw your kid up a little. Right? Isn't every parent?
Of course.
That's interesting. That has not exactly crossed my mind in particular. I think in general, I'm trying to be very aware of where my strengths and weaknesses as an individual lie, and then trying to have my kids in relationships with other people who are stronger at my weaknesses. Mm. I have 2 sisters and they're both very different than I am. And I hope that my kids will get certain things from my sisters that they're not getting from me. Because I'm pretty type A and I'm pretty take charge. I don't think that's going to screw up my kids, especially because no matter how like take charge and type A that you are, raising children is somewhat overwhelming,
right?
And you will not stay on top of every single detail of having children in the way that you're used to staying on top of the details of your life before children, like at all. You're just like trying to survive and just trying to get the major things okay, you know, fed, clean, in bed.
Well, and I think the flip side of that is, on one hand, you are the only influence in your home as the only parent, but the positive of that is you're the only influence. So you get to totally fully decide how you're going to discipline, how you're going to parent, how you're going to talk through various issues that come up and present different scenarios to your kid. There's no negotiating with any of that.
That's something that I've gotten out of my regular mommy group, hearing other women's stories about what it's like to parent. In every marriage, there is inevitably disagreement, you know, different ways of going about things. And it can be challenging for those moms to navigate that. And also, there are some divorced moms in my group and hearing their stories. I mean, I kind of joke that I own my kids outright. Yes, I'm a single parent. I don't have to listen to somebody else's input or rules or whatever. I don't know. I own my kids outright. And every single one of the divorced moms is like, oh my God, I wish I owned my kids outright, because it's not easy navigating parenting when there's a lot of other personalities. You know, even if you remain married, it's not just your husband's input, it's then your in-laws, and there's a whole host of people who have input or...
Right. To me, that is such a huge pro of being a single mother by choice, and something that sort of tipped the scale for me when I thought about, you know, I've been married and I've been in long-term relationships and I know how hard it is. And then thinking about, okay, given my timeline, if I do this with a partner, it's going to be someone I haven't known for very long, because that's the only choice at this point. So that really, once I realized that, not only was I going to be negotiating with someone, it was going to be someone I hadn't known for more than a year or so. I was just like, oh, no, I'd rather not.
Some people just have an easier time compromising, and that's probably not a strength of mine. And I have a feeling that if you polled 1,000 choice moms, that would probably be something that we have in common.
Yes. I think I was trying to use nice words like empowered, and that's really what I meant.
The first time that I ever met with this group of choice moms, I really thought that they were going to be like the leftovers of society.
Totally.
And I remember leaving that meeting and I was talking to a friend and I go, oh my God, if I had to put a man on the moon, these women, that's who I'd want on my team. They blew me away of how smart they were, how there were engineers, there were lawyers, there were creative designers. Some people ran their own businesses. It was such a can-do, wonderful group of people. I was just so impressed by the caliber of women who are making this choice. Because in my mind, I thought these are women who didn't, you know, nobody wanted or whatever. Just so stupid. But that's what I thought. So I like to say that out loud. I mean, in a way, I'm embarrassed to say that I thought that. But I want to say that out loud so that other people who are privately thinking that to themselves can hear me say it and hear me say, I know literally dozens of choice moms up close, in person, in real life, that are freaking fantastic women.
Yeah, absolutely. I have had that same experience in person, but even more so with this podcast where, you know, we get on this call and we've never spoken before. I don't really know you other than Instagram. And I've wanted to like hop on a plane and go meet this person in real life, because I'm like, we would have the best happy hour. It would be so fun. You know, like I've had to kind of work through that in my own mind. I'll meet them and think, well, she's such a catch. Why hasn't she found someone? All the things I'm worried someone is thinking about me, I will kind of like have those thoughts as well.
Right. Yeah. And when in reality, I think what is more true is the opposite, which is high caliber women are looking for very high caliber men.
And they're out there doing their work right now and figuring themselves out, and they will be ready to date at 50 when we've got our kids in school and we're ready to date again.
Yep.
We'll meet them then on the other side.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. Okay, so what are some of the things that you worried about before you were a mom and now you're just like, "Oh, I can't even believe I was so fixated on that."
The biggest thing for me was I felt, so you've been married before. I've never been married. I felt shame around having children and like never getting married. And I had to work through that. I thought it was like this capital S that it was going to be sewn on my clothes forever. And I was just going to be walking around and people were just going to be thinking something bad about me. And in reality, when you have your kids and you move on, no one gives a crap how you got that kid. They're just like, oh, you have a kid. You're a mom. You're in the club. Let's go to the park. No one cares. I was judging myself And as it turns out, nobody really cares.
How did you try to cope with that? Like, did you find yourself over explaining or hiding, or like, what was your coping strategy when you felt that way?
You know, Brené Brown and her work has been so instrumental in me overcoming some of my personal challenges. And one of the things that she taught me was that shame needs secrecy, silence, and judgment to survive. And I had to learn to not keep these feelings secret, not be silent, and not judge myself. I had to reach out to women who I could trust with sharing my feelings and my story. I had to like exercise this muscle and learn to share things that I thought were hideous about myself and that I thought applied only to me. I truly felt I'm uniquely flawed, not finding a husband, and that somehow it was going to be to my everlasting shame. And I laugh because, like, my God, I put so much pressure on myself. In the rest of my life, I'm educated, I'm talented, I have a lot of friends, I have a good family, I'm blessed. And yet, all of that just didn't count because I've not found a husband, therefore, I must live in everlasting shame. And as I reached out, shared my stories, certain friends of mine, just having them hear my story, sometimes they would say, me too, in certain ways. And when you express what you feel is uniquely flawed about yourself, and you hear somebody say, me too, it heals you in a way like no other. Connection brings healing. I didn't have a ton of baggage, but I didn't have those skills to communicate and connect about, you know, those negative emotions, the shame or the disappointment or the grief. So I think learning some tools to deal with that was life-changing for sure.
Wow, I needed that. I think that it's so difficult that we go into this deeply emotional and personal decision. And for most of us, it's nuanced with some layer of grief and sadness, but also excitement and empowerment. And then there are the hormones, and then there are the finances. And then people just love to say whatever they want to say, you know, and you really have to be in a place emotionally where you can sort of not take to heart things that people say to you that don't feel great, but you're so vulnerable because your body is compromised, your emotions are you know, your hormones are compromised, and then you're like fending these things off.
It's definitely a loaded situation, and you really want to go in with your team. You want to know, okay, who are my people that I can ask to go to an appointment with me if I feel like I need somebody to go with me? I didn't feel like I needed somebody to go with me every single time. There were certain ones. Somebody always went with me for a transfer or a retrieval or, you know, something major like that. But just a regular appointment at the OB, I didn't always need, but like my 20-week scan, I definitely want somebody to be there with me or whatever. Have your go-to people who can come with you. Who can you call and just express however you're feeling, whether it's positive, negative, somebody who just listens. Like, have your team talk to them ahead of time. Hey, I'm gonna go in and try to get pregnant this month, and you know, here's what I could really use from you, whether that's coming with you or can I call you? And if you're not there yet and you don't have a ton of people, because not everybody has a big network, I really would encourage women to start investing in that network. And if online is all that's available in your area, because some people live in places that are, there's not tons of people to connect with. Online is a great option. In person is fantastic because somebody that can come over to your house and give you a hug and, you know, bring a bottle of wine or a cup of coffee or whatever is so important. But just take the single out of becoming a single mom by choice. Know who your people are. And if you don't have people, start getting your people. And be a friend. Be the person that shows up for them. Be supportive and be in friendships where you can ask for support. If the people who populate your team right now are not well suited to do that, then you need new team members.
Right. And I love what you said about, you know, in person is great, but sometimes the people that we have in person in our lives are not the right team for us. And something I think about with the online space is, would your behavior online be weird if online was a party? So like if you just walked into a party and just watched everyone, but like never said anything and just stood there, you're not going to connect, right? Or if you're just sort of saying, hey, how's the weather to 15 people or 20 people or 100 people, you're also not going to connect deeply. When you see people in a group or, you know, you connect with people online on Instagram or wherever, and there is that vibe, investing even online, I think can be so meaningful and, you know, messaging back and forth and really developing a relationship that is deep as one that you could develop in person. But when we talk about connecting online, it's not just scrolling. Like you have to be intentional.
Yes, you really have to engage. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to put myself out there as somebody who's on the other side. I've been there. I've been a thinker. I've been a trier. I am a mom. I have two now. Like I'm somehow surviving it. And I'm trying to put my stories out there so people have something to connect to. And then as people are messaging me, I'm really taking that as an opportunity to put myself out there, connect with women, but also to share the message of, hey, you need to be connecting with multiple people. And I hope to encourage people to also maybe develop some of the communication skills that they have so that they can not only connect and engage with more people online, but maybe how to connect in different ways with people who are already in our life or who are physically in our area that maybe we don't have that level of relationships with yet.
Yeah. I mean, going back to some of your early advice about saving money, it's a similar type of preparation and investment to start, you know, if you're thinking about going down this route, starting to really invest in relationships so that, I mean, not just so that you can get from them when the time comes, but also, you know, so that you can give and that it's reciprocal and that it feels natural. And
my opinion, you're missing out if you don't have a group of choice moms that you can connect with. It's such a useful tool. Everybody has their own life and their array of people who are on their team, but don't let the fact that you don't have a partner get in the way of you really constructing what feels like a very supportive team for you, whatever that may look like.
That's such good advice. Something that I definitely wanted to ask you was about your decision to have a second child. And it sounds like from what you said earlier that that was always the plan.
Yes. I have two sisters. I have really good relationships with both of them. And to me, family is just the number one thing. And I was willing to sacrifice whatever. I would have done a lot to make that happen. That was just super important. Also, one of the things that is kind of unique with my girls, they're both from the same donor. And it is my hope and prayer that the two of them, because they will both not grow up with a biological father, potentially not grow up with a father at all, I'm hoping that someday it's something that they can navigate as a pair as opposed to a single. I mean, that's a piece of it because I don't know what it's like or what it's going to be like for them. It's not traditional. I just don't know what it's like to grow up donor conceived. And I hope and pray that they healthfully navigate that. I hope that it's a little easier for them as a pair. But on top of all of that, I just love my siblings and wanted them to have that same joy.
Yeah.
And most of my choice mom friends only have one. a lot of times, because being a choice mom is either a plan B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, for a lot of people, I think they don't start trying for the first. They kind of like run out of time to maybe have a second. Like if you were going to have a second, they maybe needed to start 3 years earlier or something like that.
Yes. If I could redo one part of my journey, just in the logistics of how I've navigated and really how I've invested financially, it would be removing all six of the IUIs I did. The main reason is not because they didn't work. Actually, I did get valuable information. I did have two positive pregnancy tests, so I knew that I was able to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then neither of those resulted in a live birth. And so I knew that there was probably my egg quality was a concern. And mm-hmm. so it was useful information. It was not worth the amount of money I spent to get there. But when I think about my actual goal and what I really want, it is important to me to have two children, like you said. And I would love, if they're both donor conceived, for them to have the same donor. And when you think mm-hmm. about that, it makes so much more sense to do IVF, to create yes. embryos, to have multiple embryos that you can then freeze instead of doing an IUI. Because at first, I think I bought like three vials at the very beginning. Yeah. And I was like, oh, perfect. There's one for me to get pregnant, one just in case it doesn't work, and then one more for the sibling. I mean, come on. Like 8 vials later, I'm like, oh my gosh, how many thousands yeah. of dollars have I spent? And when you're thinking in terms of family planning, women who start later and they haven't created that, but also the women who are just taking it one at a time and maybe don't struggle the first time and do struggle the second time. I see that a lot on the chats and things where people talk about regretting waiting for number one, but also regretting waiting for number two.
Yeah. No, I think the one thing that I would have done differently, if I had it to do over again, I would have started earlier and I would have just been way easier on myself. I waited years that were pointless. But I mean, I guess they had a point in that I was working through things, but I probably should have started working through my stuff a little earlier. I'm still grateful that I'm here and I have my girls.
Yeah. I think it's so important that we give ourselves grace for the timing, the time that it takes for us to work through stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can get really upset with myself about like, why couldn't I have done that work faster?
Right.
And it's just not useful. It's not useful to force that.
I think it's so easy for us to be hard on ourselves in terms of like decisions that we made about relationships or dating or being emotionally available or being ready, because at this point we're not married. But how good of a job have we done at avoiding terrible situations? Because a lot of women are married and are in relationships that are pretty undesirable and are maybe having to struggle with this similar kind of work, but they're already in that established relationship. And if they have kids, we really just need to be kind to ourselves about these things. Just because somebody else is married doesn't mean that they did it all right and that it's easy. Being a choice mom has its pros and cons. It has its challenges. But everybody's life has their challenges. Okay, so this is my challenge. You know, somebody else is something else. Not every choice mom is better off or worse off. Not every divorced mom or married mom is better off or worse off. You just got to stay in your lane, be super grateful for the variety of blessings that you have, and navigate it as best you can with kindness, and don't be too stuck on thinking your life has to be a particular way, because my life is not how I insisted that it, you know, be. And it's so great. And I wish I could go back and tell that person, let it go, girlfriend. It's going to be great.
Yes.
You'll get there. I look forward to it. I've really enjoyed learning about your journey and hearing your stories. And I look forward to seeing how it all plays out, because you're going to be so happy. And I also want to say thanks for doing this podcast. You're really helping a lot of women. And this is just, it's such a needed thing. And I really appreciate all the time and effort that you've put into coordinating these podcasts and for getting out a variety of women's stories. It's so important. I feel like this is sacred ground, these types of topics. And I just feel like you're doing a really great job and want to thank you for doing it.
Oh, thank you so much. And you too. And let's make sure we share. So you are creating a series of YouTube videos. So where can people find that?
It's Summer Lovret, and Lovret is spelled Lovret. So just YouTube. If you just look up Summer Lovret, you'll see my videos. Yay. Same on Instagram.
Perfect. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what people will find in the videos?
My first video it's a 20-minute version of how I became a choice mom and kind of where I started out and how things changed and where I ended up. Then I did a video on freezing my eggs and that whole process and how and why and when and all that. And then I did a video on 4 things you can do to prepare to become a choice mom. And those are the ones that are out. And I have a laundry list of other videos that I need to make. And I want to do videos with other choice moms that I know, because I have my unique story, but some of my friends have like totally different, really interesting stories. And I can't wait to get them out and just share and destigmatize and get rid of the shame. I'm on a shame busting mission.
I love it. I love it. So you guys go and follow Summer, find her on Instagram and on YouTube. It's just been such a pleasure to talk with you. I wish we could just keep talking about it. This is precious time. You got to get to bed while your girls are sleeping.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice Podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.